Suffering from seasonal irritants? As the pollen count rises, support your immune system with Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid, a targeted blend of nutrients and botanicals designed to help maintain healthy histamine balance and everyday comfort. Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid works with your body's natural response to seasonal environmental challenges, so you can feel your best all season long. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're listening to 30 Mindless Minutes, part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Remember, always use your head. Lend me your ears and welcome back to another episode of 30 Mindless Minutes. I am your host, DJ. This week, I have a very special guest. He is one of my co-hosts on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. His name is Jason. And Jason, sir, first, I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm kind of befuddled here, not getting a flowery intro or like a... yeah.
Wow.
Just like, here's Jason, everybody. All right.
Drum roll, it's Jason.
Perfect.
No, if you listen to us on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, I have an entire intro that I do for Rob and Jason. It's a long thing. And I am trying to, at least as much as possible, try to separate 30 Mindless Minutes from the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, even though I am mining my guests from my own podcast network in the early going here. But Jason, again, I want to thank you for coming on 30 Mindless Minutes, sir. Thank you for giving me and the audience a little bit of your time.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
So what do I have Jason on here about? As you guys have been, if you're listening to this episode now, we're four episodes deep. And what I like to do is come up with a new topic every week and spend about 30 minutes talking about new ideas, meeting new people, creative things, kicking things around, you know, stuff like that. And one thing that I wanted to talk about with Jason is he's got a really, really neat story that's a bit of a Christmas tradition for him and his family. And it got me to thinking over the last few days, you know, I have a few traditional things here, but I also take things that I hold dear from like family heirlooms and things like that. And I kind of thought this might kind of snowball into a whole big topic here that we could just kind of get into tonight. And we kind of want to keep the Christmas and holiday spirit alive. We're not ready to let go of that yet. Trying to bring some good cheer and goodwill into the new year and just share some fun, heartwarming stories that Jason has, that I have. And those of you that are following me from the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, you've probably heard these, but it's nice for the newer audience to kind of hear this because I think they are, at least Jason's story, I think is wonderful. And then, you know, I want to share mine, which Jason knows, but there is a little bit more to my story that I just found out over the last week or so. So I'm going to kick this over to Jason. Jason, you guys have a wonderful family tradition that, again, I've heard the story. I like hearing it. It's very heartwarming, makes me feel good. And I'd like you to share that with the audience here today.
Well, I'm sure you're referring to my family's cinnamon roll tradition.
Yes.
So around Christmas, every year at Christmas, I'm actually quickly going through my mom's old cookbook, trying to find out if I can find an exact year when it all started. Since I was a little boy, you know, I would wake up Christmas morning and I would not storm down the stairs and tear open my presents. No, I would get in the car with my father and we would, you know, drive to our various friends and neighbors and we would deliver cinnamon rolls. My mother would spend the days before creating, you know, making, sometimes it was 50, sometimes it was over 300 cinnamon rolls, that we would deliver to our family, friends, relatives, neighbors, all the people we love. And the trick was that we did not open presents, a single present of our own, until all the cinnamon rolls were delivered. So routinely, we did not start opening Christmas presents, and I'm serious, until like noon, 1 in the afternoon. So I literally never once experienced running down the stairs, tearing open the presents on Christmas morning. I've never experienced that in my life. So, it's a cool thing that we, that got started. I'm trying to find out the year, but yeah, DJ, you're going to have to try some. So
it is on my bucket list to have a traditional family cinnamon roll, at some point. Diabetes be damned. Those of you who've been following this show, you know I talked very openly about my type 2 diabetes here a couple weeks ago with EJ. But there are just some things sometimes, pal, you just got to bite the bullet and understand that some things have to happen. And a traditional Howe family cinnamon roll, because I love cinnamon rolls, and a homemade cinnamon roll, nothing beats, man. So it is on my bucket list of things to do. I adore the fact that you and your wife have now adopted this tradition.
Yeah, and I was going to say that my sister took, you know, when my mother passed away in the late 2000s, like it wasn't even a question. Like the next Christmas came around, it was, you know, she passed away in September. Christmas came around, it was like, all right, let's do it. I mean, Michelle, my sister, had already taken over. She had helped my mom with previous years, so it wasn't that big of a deal to switch things up, but it was still important to us that it keep going. And gosh, I'm gonna get emotional thinking about it. But and then it's been very important that my wife and I, as soon as we moved into our house, we started doing it. And so we took a lot of the neighbors in Pembroke and where we live, where my dad also lives. So, yeah, it's become a whole, multi-generational, tradition.
That's really excellent. And that's, again, like I said, that is on my bucket list of things to do. So do you just do your neighborhood, or do you do your neighborhood and immediate family?
No, I mean, we'll do, at this point, we're doing people like as many as like 4 days before. We're giving people unbaked rolls with a bag of frosting and with a little sheet of instructions, or, hey, we'll text you later, some years. And so we just say, okay, put them in the oven for this long, you know, make them Christmas morning, and it'll be almost like we just dropped them off. So we do a lot of that, those deliveries in the days before. So okay. How many did we do this year? Yeah. Well,
a lot.
And a lot. Yeah.
So, and you said that number kind of ebbs and flows from year to year, like it's not a static number.
Yeah, it just depends on who's around, and like, you know, if you're home for Christmas, if, you know, people move, people go places, stuff. And, you know, we are, unfortunately, it's how we got to 300 rolls when I was in my teenage years, 300 plus. But, you know, you always add people every year. And then there's not a lot of people who seem to come off the list. So every year, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, and then you got to figure, as you know, as we all get older, and the kids of people who were friends of ours start having kids of their own, those families grow. And if you continue to keep those families in the loop, or even friends who have kids, whose kids now have kids, which is the situation I'm finding myself in now. We were at the holidays at my girlfriend's family, and I'm looking around, and there's little ones, like 1 and 2 and 4 year olds running around. And I remember when those kids were kids, you know, when their parents were kids. So it's crazy. So yeah, you have to expect that, you know, those numbers may actually rise as we get older. So, no, just a wonderful, wonderful tradition, wonderful holiday story that I like hearing. One that I shared, and this isn't so much of a like a tradition thing as it is more of an heirloom, hand-me-down type of thing. When my daughter was – I have kids. I have twins. I have a boy and a girl. And when they were somewhere around 4, maybe 5 years old, and they're both getting ready to turn 21, so it's been a number of years. So we were watching the holiday film Polar Express. Now, let me – for context, I didn't know that this was based on a book until after I'd already seen the movie. So I went into the movie not knowing anything about the book or the story or anything.
How would
like that.
You never – that blows my mind, by the way. How would you never seen – like my – that was another real tradition. Like my mother loved that story, and we would read it almost every Christmas when I was much younger.
Yeah, I never knew it. Like I knew all the traditional Christmas things, but like – and this isn't Christmas related, but like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, I never knew this was a book. You know, I remember talking with a friend of mine when it came out in the theater. He's like, oh man, I loved that book when I was a kid. I'm going to see that. I'm like, this was a book? You know, I feel like my childhood is missing.
That makes more sense, because that was a book when he was a kid, not when you were a kid, like Polar Express was.
He and I are the same age.
Well, okay. Well, even still, polar experience, like, yeah, it just depends. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, I totally buy that. You've never heard of that book. Again, Polar Express just blows my mind.
Never knew it was a thing. So I went into the movie not knowing anything. I thought it was a beautiful film. I know fans of the book had a lot of complaints with the movie itself and the CG and the motion capture and everything that they used in the production of the movie. I don't care. The story touched me. The story moved me. The voice acting moved me. My kids were 4 or 5 years old. They were mesmerized by it. And to me, that's what the holidays are about, watching Christmas through my kids' eyes. So my kids are watching this movie, and you know, I'm watching it with them. And you know, the crux of the story is centers around these kids going to the North Pole, and the kids that believe end up getting a sleigh bell. And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't watched the movie in a little bit, but everybody that believes in Santa gets a sleigh bell, like a reindeer sleigh bell. And I remember watching the movie, and my daughter, when the movie was over, she turned around and she looked at me and she said, "Daddy, I want a sleigh bell because I believe." Now, it's December 23rd when we're watching this movie, okay? And my daughter looks at me, my 4 or 5 year old daughter looks at me, and she's like, "Daddy, I want a sleigh bell because I believe." And I'm like, it is priority number one to find my kid a sleigh bell 48 hours before Santa Claus is supposed to be here. And where am I going to find this? Because most stores have completely sold out of all their holiday decorations. Nobody has anything stocked. We are literally down to like one strand of lights, some wrapping paper, and maybe like a box of Christmas balls at this point. So I grab my keys. I head in the car. I'm heading out. I drive all over my county. Everywhere. I stopped at every Walmart, Target, drugstore, every place that I could think of. We even had a little Christmas shop in like a little downtown area that I went in, and they were completely picked dry. Like, there were no sleigh bells to be had anywhere. At this point, I was like, if I see anything that even looks like a sleigh bell, I'm going to rip it off, pocket it, and walk out of the store. So after driving around exhaustingly for like 3 or 4 hours, I finally end up in, of all places, a Kohl's. And I go in there, and in the women's section, I happened to find a red belt that had sleigh bells dangling from it. It was like a little costume prop belt or something like that, that somebody was supposed to be part of the costume. So I bought the belt, brought it home, broke off two of the little sleigh bells and left them on my kids' nightstands for them to find the next morning, so that to reassure them that Santa Claus had arrived and that Santa Claus had heard them, and more specifically heard my daughter, and managed to keep the spirit of Christmas and Santa Claus for these kids alive for another season. Because it's very weird becoming a dad and watching it through your kids' eyes. And trying to explain that to people that don't have kids is difficult, because before I had kids, I didn't get it. Like, I was like, okay, Christmas is over. The magic is gone. I'm in my 20s and, you know, what are we doing now? But when you become a dad, you become a parent, and you start watching it through your kids' eyes, suddenly the magic reappears. So the magic wasn't just back for them. It was them there for me as well. So the next year, didn't rush around, didn't try to find a sleigh belt. What my ex-wife, the kid's mom, what she did was she went online and she found a Christmas ornament. And it was the it was from the movie. It was a ticket for the train. It was the train. And then attached to the whole thing, dangling at the bottom, was a little sleigh bell. And that she ended up giving it to my daughter the next year at Christmas, and we put it on the tree and everything like that. And, you know, as the years went by, we separated, and, you know, things went their own way, and I ended up with very, very little at the end of all that. Things got lost to obscurity. This year, I didn't decorate the tree. My son and his friend did, and they were decorating the tree. I took the tree down this year, and somehow or another, this ornament was on my tree. And I had no idea that I even had it. And what I think may have happened was when my son moved in with me, she gave him a bunch of stuff, and it included some Christmas ornaments. And it may have been in there. That's the only way that I can think of that I got it, because she decidedly kept a lot of the old Christmas ornaments. And it was such a treat for me to find that dangling on my tree this year. And completely unaware that it was even on there.
That's awesome.
It was.
That's so cool, man.
brought me right back to that moment. And now it's an heirloom that I will keep and give to her as she makes her way into the world and eventually buys her own tree and decorates her own tree. This is something that I'll hand down to her that hopefully she'll cherish and she'll remember the way that I remember it, and she'll keep it in her heart the way that I have. And that's really the second half of what I'd like to talk about here, is not just traditions, not just family things, but like family heirlooms. And Jason, do you have any like family heirloom, hand-me-downs, things like that from, you know, grandparents, parents, things of that nature?
Yeah, we, it's actually right behind me. I've got a wooden car. Hang on, actually, I can turn on my camera for a moment. Where'd it go? Where's the car?
Uh-oh.
Is it in the other room? It's in the other room, isn't it? Anyway, it's a wooden car. My father, my grandfather on my mother's side, well, mother's father, was a carpenter, and it's apparently been relocated. But he made a bunch of wooden cars, like old-timey toy wooden cars. And there was a motorcycle that my brother got because he actually rides, which makes sense. And my sister got a little pickup truck that he made, and I got a buggy, a little car, a little hatchback looking thing. Somewhere in the house. Yeah, it got relocated. Anyway, okay, enough. I have no idea where it went. But anyway, yeah, we have that. We have, and the biggest thing that I'm going to get from my father is books. Like, I don't even have anything cool. I'm just going to get all of his. But to me, that's like, that's the kind of cool heirlooms. Like, you know, yeah, a sword or like something badass is cool. But like, I really makes me happy that like, if I ever were to, you know, my books are going to go to somebody hopefully one day. And just, I spent a lot of time collecting these things, and they're kind of a reflection of who I am and what I was interested in. And like, just, you know, peek into my psyche. And my dad's collection is the exact same thing. And it's, important that that kind of stuff goes on to somebody. So I think like collections like that, especially when it's stuff you can use, you know, like, God bless, but I don't think I'm going to find a big home for my Funko Pops when I pass away. Like, I don't think anybody's big clamoring for those, but you know, books, you know, something you could use, something you can read, something you can, you know, learn from. Pretty cool. So yeah, that's going to be the big thing. I can already tell, because my brother and my sister is not interested in 3/4 of the subject matter, you know, airplanes and spy books and stuff like that.
Right.
And then, my brother just doesn't read. So like that anyway. So I know I'm going to get all that crap.
You're an avid reader anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. I'm the reader of the family anyway. So my dad and I were, and well, my mom was, she read a lot. But I was the only one who really took it.
Yeah.
Took it to the extreme.
The two big heirloom type things that I have in my life right now, my dad, again, like your grandfather, was a woodworker. He wasn't a carpenter by trade, but he did a lot of beautiful woodwork, as he, you know, because he was, did like blue collar work for work. He was into construction and things like that. But his woodworking was a hobby, and he made, you know, shadow boxes and shelves and just different racks for different things, and just beautiful, beautiful work. And as he's gotten older and he's doing less and less of that now, he started to hand all these old projects away. You know, he never sold any of them. He always just built them for people. And it's probably hundreds and hundreds of these things that are sitting in people's houses right now with shelves, you know, just shelving, corner shelves and plant shelves and things like that. So, and I have a few of those. He gave some to me. He basically had all this stuff shoved in a closet. And about 4 or 5 years ago, we went up to see him for his birthday. It was me and my two brothers. And he said, look, boys, have at it. Just clean out my closet. Take whatever you want. Just get it out of my house. So we divvied stuff up and brought it home. The other neat thing that I have is my granny, my dad's mom, was a quilter. And she spent her entire life making quilts. I am probably not exaggerating when I say thousands. Like, and that's not an exaggeration. She just quilted and pushed because she didn't work. She just quilted her entire life. And anytime I ever saw her, she was quilting something. And she would stay with us for periods of time, and she would make 6, 8, 10 quilts over the year that she was with us. And I have quilts that are old, like older than my kids, in my house. And the neat thing about the quilts and the neat thing about these handmade heirlooms and things like that, that I really, really like, is that it's not just a hand-me-down. It's a time capsule, you know, because I have quilt that my granny made when she was younger than I am now. And that's very fascinating to me that this is like a time capsule of where she was in her life. And you look forward through the years at the quilts that she's done. And as she got older and up in life, you can definitely tell that some of the craftsmanship wasn't quite there. The hands weren't quite as nimble. Her eyes weren't quite as good. But the love and the attention to detail is still there, even if the overall craftsmanship has started to slip. And while one could look at that and say, okay, well, this quilt looks really, really good, this one doesn't look very good at all, to me, it's an interesting progression of life. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And especially it makes you think of, like, especially now, these last couple of years, I've been like really looking back at things and kind of looking at just life in general when I'm realizing that I'm now the same age my parents were when they had me.
Yeah.
So like that really puts things into perspective. And when you can see or touch or feel like you said, a time capsule to that time, it is kind of a very cool and surreal feeling.
Yeah, it really is. You almost connect in some weird, like my granny passed away in 2020. It's like right around the pandemic era is when granny passed away. So it's almost like you can reach back and touch that person in time because this is what they were doing in 1985, in 1979, in 2000, you know, this is what she was doing at those particular phases in her life. And it's just, it's a very fascinating thing to me. And it's unfortunately that quilting skill, at least on that side of my family, is one that will probably pass away with her. And like I said, she's been gone for a few years now. My aunts didn't pick it up. My dad has his own talents. My dad, you know, like he does his leather work. He does his woodwork, but he didn't pick up the quilting end. My aunts don't quilt. I don't know that anybody else on that side of the family does either. The closest I'll get is my girlfriend. She does it. She's not a quilter, but she can quilt, and she's made a few. They're gorgeous. They're beautiful. She did. She had a close friend of the family, was her mother's best friend, passed away several years ago, and she gathered up all of her shirts, like T-shirts and things like that, and cut them out, blocked them in, and made a quilt out of it and gave them to her widower as a gift.
Oh, that's cool.
a few months after she passed away. And that's, to me, that'll be a wonderful thing that he can hand down to his kids. They can hand down to their kids. Hey, this was your grandma, your great grandma. This is her, you know, this is her being. And I feel like some of that is being lost on the younger generation of people. Like I look at my kids and, you know, I love my kids, but I don't think they, at least not that they verbalize, they place any value in that type of stuff. And as I look around the room at some of my own projects, as I've talked on this show and on the Mindless Wrestling podcast, I do little scale model cars. I paint them, I build them, and, you know, I probably have 3 dozen that are completed, another 3 dozen to do. And, you know, when I pass on, I would like to think that my kids want them, but I don't know. You know, they think it's cool that dad does it, but I don't know that there's this, hey, when you're gone, I want those, you know? Right. So it's just kind of one of those things. And maybe it's just my kids, but it just seems to be that love of heirlooms and that handing of things down, it seems to be going away. And that kind of makes me a little sad.
I think that you might also see that change, you know, as they get older and start to, you know, appreciate more of those type of things.
That's a possibility. That really is a possibility. And I hope so, you know, because I look at my cars and while there's very little monetary value in them, each one of them does tell a story, you know. And again, you can look at skill level, where my skill started off terrible, where it improved, and where as I begin to age, if I continue to do this, where you can tell, again, the time capsule thing, where as my hands aren't as nimble, my eyes aren't as good, or the skill may diminish as the years go on. And hopefully they'll look at that the same way that I do with my granny's quilts, you know, as the period pieces for different points in her life.
Hopefully. Yeah, I think, again, man, they're at an age who, you know, are they thinking about that kind of stuff yet?
And to think about it, I may not have been at 20 either. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a very real generational thing, and it may just be the age of life that they're in.
Right.
So have you got any other things?
No, I mean, my family is always kind of into our we traced – my mom was big into genealogy, so she traced our family all over the place on both sides. We have a lot of Scottish on my dad's side, and his middle name is McNeil. So we're the McNeils of Barra, not the other McNeils. We're on the Isle of Barra. We were pirates for a little while. So hell yeah. We have a tartan, and you know, my dad and I all have, we have ties and just little knickknacks and things like that, that, you know, if you ever see me and my brother and my dad in a photo together and we're in suits, we're probably wearing those ties, you know.
Very nice.
So yeah, it's just little things like that, that, and yeah, it's just pretty cool to know that I share, you know, some of my ancestors were actual pirates who harassed English shipping lanes. Like, that's pretty awesome.
That is a neat bit of trivia.
Fight the empire.
You and I have been working together for 4 years, Jason, and I learn something new about you all the time.
That's right. I'm a pirate.
You're a pirate by lineage, pal.
By bloodline.
That's awesome. All right. Well, Jason, sir, I think we're going to get out of here. I do like to keep these episodes to 30 minutes. We're coming short on time. I want to thank you. This has been fun. This has been a really good kind of a walk down memory lane and just a good catching up with you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. I would love to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. I'll have you on at some point. I want to get Rob on here and talk some stuff with him. But we are just about out of time for you, the listener. If you made it this far, again, I want to thank you for listening to 30 Mindless Minutes. I get you out of here in 30 minutes or less because you got shit to do.